Hi there. Welcome back to Health Law Diagnosed, a Mintz podcast dedicated to health law, health policy, and social issues in the healthcare industry. I'm Bridget Keller, your podcast host. Today, we are continuing with our new series featuring women leaders in healthcare. In these episodes, we bring together women leaders who we have the pleasure of knowing and working with for discussions of key issues in the healthcare industry and for developing a career in the healthcare industry. Today's episode is focused on the emerging role of artificial intelligence, or AI, in healthcare. Artificial intelligence has been defined as a machine-based system that can, for a given set of human-defined objectives, make predictions, recommendations, or decisions influencing real or virtual environments. Artificial intelligence systems use machine and human-based inputs to perceive real and virtual environments, abstract such perceptions into models through analysis in an automated manner, and use model inference to formulate options for information or action. So my understanding is that generative AI, programs like ChatGPT, which we've seen a lot in the news about, they became much more effective in recent years in response to the amount of data that was put into this system or that became available. Specifically, the T in GPT referring to the transformer, and the size of the transformers enabled artificial learning to now be based on a much larger data input, and as a result, is much more effective. In healthcare, we've seen reports that generative AI is enabling research and development with the goal of speeding up drug discovery. It could even be used in developing additional mRNA technologies. Health systems are looking to find ways to use AI to predict hospital length of stay, patient deterioration, surgical outcomes, maybe even scheduling inefficiencies in clinical workflows. But regulation of AI has not caught up yet. OpenAI's CEO recently urged Congress to regulate the industry. Sam Altman's regulatory wish list included a new agency that would license any effort above a certain threshold of capabilities, testing of potentially dangerous AI models before deployment, and independent audits. And to date, regulation has been piecemeal. In October 2023, President Biden signed an executive order to establish AI standards. This order requires responsible use of AI in healthcare and affordable drug development. It also charges the Department of Health and Human Services to set up a safety program to collect reports of harms or unsafe healthcare practices involving AI. And so all of these advances over the last year have led us to today's episode, which is focused on AI in healthcare. And I am joined by three wonderful guests. Today we have Jane Moran, the Chief Information and Digital Officer at Mass General Brigham, Rebecca Mishouris, Chief Medical Information Officer at Mass General Brigham, and Karina Edwards, CEO of Kipu Health. Everyone, welcome. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would love for you all to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background, your career path, and a brief highlight of your work with AI before we jump into the discussion. Jane, would you like to start us off?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Jane Moran. I'm the Chief Information and Digital Officer at Mass General Brigham. Mass General Brigham is the largest employer in Massachusetts, and it's the largest health system. And my experience before coming here was actually as Chief Information Officer and Chief Technology Officer at Unilever, the big global brands organization. So I've been in my current role about 2 years, and I was at Unilever for about 7. And then prior to that, I spent 25 years in financial services technology. We're doing a lot of work with AI, as you can imagine, and I'm sure we'll get into some details. But the initial use cases here around AI, especially on our patient side, had to do with COVID and scheduling vaccines. And so that was really kind of what started the ball rolling, so to speak, in the AI front for Mass General Brigham.
How interesting. Thank you, Jane, and welcome. Rebecca, would you like to go next?
Sure. Thanks very much, and thanks for having me. Rebecca Mishouris, I am the Chief Medical Information Officer for Mass General Brigham and also a practicing primary care physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital. And so I see the work that we're doing in digital from both sides, both from the digital side and also from the physician or provider and patient experience side as well. My entire family gets their care here. And so feel, you know, really privileged to be able to do this work. And I think the kind of 30,000 foot view umbrella of what I do is to determine how we can use digital solutions to deliver better care and deliver care better. And we are certainly looking towards AI and generative AI specifically to be able to do that as another tool in our toolkit to be able to bring those solutions to bear against the biggest challenges of healthcare.
Wonderful. Karina.
Hi, everyone. Pleasure to be here. I'm Karina Edwards. I'm the CEO of Kipu Health. We are the leading electronic medical record and revenue cycle management platform designed for behavioral health. So I'm serving a different segment of the market, specifically substance use disorder and eating disorder segments within behavioral health. I am a 30-year veteran of healthcare technology. I've dedicated my career to developing these solutions and bringing solutions like this to market. So I grew up on the product management side and started in healthcare at Philips, where I helped take physiological monitoring and make it into insights for care teams, streamlining documentation. At Nuance, it was really about bringing the patient's story to the forefront of clinical documentation. And then most recently, you know, before joining Kipu at Improvata, it was really centered around clinical identity and access management, making technology easier for care teams to utilize every day. And so here at Kipu, it's phenomenal to be on the EMR and the RevCycle platform side because we get to bring AI to 1,600 customers and 2,500 facilities at a big scale. And so the impact is really interesting on the clinical documentation and RevCycle side. So lots of examples to pepper in.
Oh, definitely. Oh, wow. So I'm so excited for our discussion today. Jane, would you mind kicking us off? Where do you see AI being successful in the healthcare space?
I think looking at all of our different constituents. And so when we think about healthcare delivery, especially in the technology and digital space, we're looking at the experiences first and foremost for our patients, for our care teams, so our clinicians, for our researchers, and then for our employees. And so on the patient side, I mentioned at Mass General Brigham, we used AI to assist with COVID screening and vaccine scheduling, but now we're expanding to help with more self-service capabilities for our patients, including helping them with scheduling appointments and finding appropriate care. For our care teams, our providers and our care teams are using AI to assist with administrative tasks, also streamlining workflows and providing clinical decision support. For our employees, our new AI tools are helping our employees work smarter and get what they need faster. And then on the research side, our researchers across Mass General Brigham are building and training AI to unlock new discoveries and breakthroughs in care. And we're also training the next generation of our, you know, our medical, we actually have medical AI researchers here that are using AI to help solve medical diseases, et cetera. And so very interesting in these four areas. And there's a number of detailed use cases we have.
That's fascinating. And Rebecca, you work with Jane together at Mass General Brigham. And so do you want to tell us a little bit about the types of projects that you're working on?
Yeah, happy to. And yes, I work with and for Jane, actually, and have that honor. And so, you know, I think as Jane mentioned, we are starting in the administrative burden space when it comes to our care teams. So to our clinicians and other staff in our clinical spaces, largely that is driven by a risk tolerance, right? And we want to get comfortable with this technology before we start using it in spaces like decision-making around diagnostics and therapeutic treatments. But also because that's where the technology is right now, right? That's where a lot of the vendors are in today's world. And so while there's a lot of research going into the space of diagnosis and treatment and how we might use AI in those spaces, the work we actually have underway and in real production is around administrative burden. However, it's not a detriment. We actually know that administrative burden is a huge contributor to burnout. And that is obviously one of the biggest challenges in healthcare today. And so one of the projects that we currently have underway is to use what's called ambient documentation to help facilitate writing clinical notes. Our providers spend an inordinate amount of time writing clinical notes that are a legal record of what happened in the visit. It's also communication to the patient. It's a communication to other providers who might be caring for that patient. And it's a communication to their future selves for the next time they see the patient. And we know that clinicians who spend more time documenting and in the EHR are more likely to be burned out. And so this technology uses large language models to listen to a recording of a clinical encounter. So a physician or a nurse practitioner or PA with their patient, listen to the clinical encounter and summarize it into a fairly coherent clinical note that goes into the electronic health record. So we are in process of our first wave of implementation of that technology with about 800 of our providers across Mass General Brigham, really focused on workflow, how effective the technology is in facilitating workflow, and the impact that it will have on burden and burnout of our providers.
Rebecca, I love that. I feel like so often when you're talking about AI, the headlines we see are AI is going to be replacing humans. And here we're really thinking about how can we use AI to keep our humans in the profession, right? And prevent burnout. And that's really wonderful. I love that.
Yeah, it actually is allowing us to be more present with our patients. So I've actually been using the technology myself for a while when I see my patients in primary care. And what I've noticed is that I no longer touch the computer during my visit. Whereas before, I'd be clacking away on the keyboard the entire time I was with the patient. I now look at my patients. And that is drastically different from how I have been delivering care until now.
Yes, that's wonderful. When I used to work in patient advocacy and patient relations, so often the technology was between the provider and the patient. They sort of, even though it was great because you could get the notes in much faster, right? And having electronic medical records really smoothed things, but it was always a complaint from either the patient or the provider saying, it's a barrier between me and my patient. So that's wonderful news. That's a really great development. And Karina, so tell us a little bit about what you're working on and where do you see AI being successful in the healthcare space?
Yeah, thank you. I want to build off of Rebecca's response because we are also putting AI in the clinical documentation realm. And I think we've had this now in production for over 6 months. And what we're seeing is all of the points that she highlighted, but the two biggest benefits are 50% reduction in documentation time, which is just phenomenal. So it streamlines the flow, the better patient interaction, but also we have one facility that's reported a 36% increase in the use of evidence-based treatment plans. And I think it's that notion of being able to start pulling in the evidence as you're thinking about how the next steps for the patient and the treatment plan needs to be informed. So that's been great to see. On a broader set, shifting gears from clinical documentation, revenue cycle is a great opportunity. We are starting to think through how we better analyze insurance claims and catch potential issues before they even get submitted. So we can do a lot of learning on our models across to think through the big payer implications on let's not have facilities go back and forth, you know, adjudicating claims and like arguing claims and getting more documentation. Let's make sure it's all wrapped up before we hit the send button. So that's one aspect. And then the last aspect is really on the patient acquisition and alumni management. Right. We're starting to play with partners that are thinking through a discharge and a 365-day patient engagement potential relapse implication. And so as you're thinking through our segment, our patients are either leaving 30, 60, 90-day rehab. They're going back into their day lives. They're getting integrated. And being able to leverage AI with chatbots and text messaging that goes back to clinical teams to get sediment, but also get clinical videos that are then thinking about, are we seeing signs of depression? Are we seeing signs of relapse? Where can we? This is really early in the development. I mean, we are not prime time here, but it's the clinical trials of this technology that I think can really unlock interesting patient engagement models in the outpatient setting.
Wow, that's fascinating. It's so cool to think of, right? You know, how we can train these new workflows and these new models to really catch different pieces of treatment that might not normally have been caught, you know, outside of the AI learning. That's wonderful. And I'm just wondering, and I'd love to ask all three of you this question, but because I feel like you each have a different set of stakeholders. And so I'm wondering, what are your stakeholders asking about? What is everyone interested in when it comes to AI in the healthcare space?
I'll start off. They're asking really, you know, for everything. I think one, they're asking us to solve problems that matter. And I know that seems obvious, but, you know, again, making life easier for just the
infrastructure of what is healthcare today. It's so complicated. There's so many specialties. Our patients have a hard time navigating. Rebecca touched on the provider burnout. And so whatever makes it easier for folks to either have access or to do their jobs and to be able to scale that technology. They're also asking us, as you can imagine, how can we keep it safe? And so there's a lot of, you know, and I'm sure we'll get to this, but the ethics and equity of AI, privacy, the transparency of the data, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, just at a very high level, I think that's what I'm seeing.
It's interesting. We get a lot of questions like from the clinical teams on the ground that says, like, is it going to disrupt my session? Is it going to hurt my relationship? Is the patient going to really be transparent if they know they're being recorded? And I think this notion of, does it actually help? Will it get it right? And many times, I mean, we all use AI in our day lives. And you know, you can feed a model, but then you get these responses back. Or I use some things in my group Zoom meetings with my own teams, and I see the notes and the actions afterwards, and I'm like, doesn't really get it 100%, but it's close. So I think it's not replacing human beings. It really is augmenting, and you're still putting your specific touches on your care plans, your notes, your actions, your summaries. And so I think there's that balance of it's making me more efficient, but is it safe and will it disrupt and is it right?
And I think building off of that, people are really concerned about, is the AI going to work for me or am I going to work for the AI, right? Is it my responsibility to fix it when the AI gets it wrong? Or can we make sure that the AI is kind of only intervening in ways that it's going to get it right? And so I don't have to go in and, right? It's not my new job to watch the AI, right? That we're putting it in places where it is safe and effective. And then, you know, I think the other area that people are thinking about is how do we use this to deliver higher quality care, more equitable care? So not just the equity of the AI itself, right? But actually promoting more equitable, higher quality care. I know there's lots of statistics about how much medical knowledge there is and how much that changes very quickly over time. And so how do we harness that body of medical knowledge that is continuously changing and growing and put it at the fingertips of our clinicians who have developed practice acumen over years, but need to make sure they have the latest information at their fingertips to deliver that high quality, equitable care that we all seek to provide.
Yeah, it's fascinating because as we're talking about this, right, you know, Jane, you brought up the topics of ethics, right, and, you know, data privacy and security, right, and Karina, you brought up patients needing to agree to it, right, like I need to agree to be recorded, or am I comfortable with my data going into an AI machine, right? All of these thorny questions that we think about from both a legal and regulatory perspective, as well as an ethics perspective, they're very important, right? But then they lead us all to this place of, okay, well, what's safe and effective? How can we ensure that the programs are not creating or perpetuating additional discrimination or bias, right? And we can only do that with more information, right? So it's sort of like, it's only as effective as however many people will participate in the program to begin with. And something else that's really interesting to me that you all were touching on, right? The idea of like, well, how much am I going to have to do after the AI works? Am I working for the AI or is the AI working for me? And one of the things, there was a CMS memo, I think, in early February to Medicare Advantage plans, right? Where they said, you can use AI to assist with utilization review, but, you know, you still need to make sure that your utilization review determinations were still specific and included individual specific information. So it's really interesting to see where this is coming. Go ahead, Jade.
Yeah, just on that point, I mean, with bias and discrimination, AI algorithms can be biased if they're trained on data that is not representative of the population.
Right.
So you mentioned that in large language models, this can lead to discrimination where certain groups of people may be underdiagnosed or undertreated or not even part of the population. So I think we talk a lot about what we do with AI governance to, you know, we have a process. And where we have AI, we review the algorithms and the data. So we do a lot of work looking at our own internal large language models to ensure that there's transparency around that source data and how we're using it. And I know that there's a lot of other organizations. Rebecca, you may mention Microsoft just announced recently as part of this train program. There's a number of governance programs out there, but to ensure that we don't discriminate and there's not bias in these large language models, as well as we have that privacy and security and transparency of the underlying data. I think that's really important.
And it's really going to take us coming together across healthcare as an industry, across our vendors, across the regulatory space, the government levels, us all coming together to be sure that we are all cognizant of and working off of the same page as it relates to things like ethics and transparency and accountability of AI. And so that's where some of these national organizations are popping up, like the Microsoft Train Initiative. Coalition for Health AI just announced a CEO, Ryan Anderson. The White House has a pledge for safe and effective and accountable health AI. Massachusetts, as our home state, right, just launched a task force around AI that Jane is going to sit on from the healthcare perspective. And so I really think it's imperative on us in healthcare to not stay within healthcare, but to share across the country and quite honestly, the world, as we think about the implications for these systems. Because, you know, as Jane mentioned, the algorithms can be biased based off the data they're trained on. If there are whole populations missing from that data, it can also be biased because we are inherently biased as human beings, right? And so the care we deliver in reality is biased in some ways, and we know that. And so can we actually use the AI to undo that bias, right? To counteract our inherent biases? But we can only do that if we're looking for it.
I also think there's a great opportunity here to make sure like we stay in our lanes as it progresses. And so this notion of, right, jumping to, will it replace human judgment? No, in no time soon will it replace human judgment, right? There's really true opportunities for efficiency and scale. But then there's the, where am I ensuring? Because nobody wants us to go back to those early EMR days where it was documented template notes and the patient had no voice and there was no, that it just happened naturally with just a technology solution versus a provider patient relationship and integrated care planning. And so these are things I think we just need to always watch out for as we're starting to scale these things. But clearly the efficacy and the regulatory compliance is going to be huge.
Oh, absolutely. And Karina, that sets us up for my next question for you all. And would you kick us off? Where do you think AI and healthcare will be 10 years from now?
I mean, with the lily pad theory, right? I mean, is it really going to be 10 years or is it going to be two? But as you think about there, the predictors here is, can it really become a clinician's secret weapon? Can we start thinking about medical scans and abnormalities and like just getting towards like personalized healthcare in a whole new way? I mean, that's a very big scientific perspective, but I also think it's going to make us a lot more efficient and scalable because we have an overwhelming demand hitting our health system with a huge amount of clinical, you know, just a shortage across the board. Name a segment of healthcare. There are not enough providers. There is not enough people in the system to care for the aging population. And so, and the much more complex medical cases that we're getting into the system. And so this is where I'm hoping it will really augment us as a society to help us be able to deliver the best possible population health at scale.
Definitely. That would be wonderful.
So my first answer is I have no idea, right? 10 years ago, did anyone predict that we would be here today? No, right? Not a single person. But I think that Karina's right, right? We have the real opportunity to make this a true inflection point in healthcare delivery, both in terms of how we deliver healthcare and how patients receive it. And so I think we have the opportunity to actually use this to deliver really high quality, equitable care, safe care to our patients with impressive patient experience while also addressing the burnout crisis that we have and making healthcare a field that people want to go into again, as opposed to something that people are leaving in droves. But it's going to take everybody working together. And it means that, you know, as part of that, we're going to have to change how we educate and how we train the next generation of healthcare providers and clinicians, because they will have to be trained with this technology in mind, which is not how we have traditionally trained medical students, right? Medical students still get trained to write paper notes and then translate it into the EHR. And we have to drastically change that.
I didn't know that. I didn't know the training was still on paper notes. And then you learn the EHR. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I'm just going to build on what Rebecca is saying. I think that it's hard to know the use cases. I think they're going to be a bit incremental, and they're going to make sure, you know, everybody wants to make sure that they're safe and secure. So it's going to be about improving workflows and easing administrative burden. And those will be the most, I think, where we can develop the most. But I think that there's going to be ancillary industries that are going to completely flip over, and technology is one of them. So with this technology, that's changing the development of the whole technology infrastructure supporting healthcare. And you're not going to be able to have some of these legacy systems in place and be able to use AI if you don't actually progress the infrastructure of the technology that supports the healthcare organization. So many of these, you know, I know there's a lot of healthcare organizations out there that are leaning into cloud-based platforms that are really the foundation of allowing us to have AI solutions. I also think there's going to be just a complete renovation in how we look at data, manage data, de-identify data, look at the models around data, how we collaborate with data with other healthcare systems. And I think AI will allow us to do that, but that's going to be a real shift in how we're all working today.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with all of you more. I mean, it's so interesting, and it will be interesting to see where we go. And I really thank you all so much for your time today and this discussion. And I'm going to throw one last question out for each of you to answer. And it is, what is the one piece of advice you would give to women who are looking to have a career in healthcare technology?
Thank you for that. I would say my one piece of advice for a career in technology and healthcare technology is to lean in to the new technologies. I mean, healthcare is on fire with all kinds of great digital capabilities, and is to, you know, get as much exposure. I believe that there's not always going to be a step up in your career, that there's going to be a lot of lateral moves. So having experience across the board in a number of these different technologies would really enable your career. And my last piece of advice for all women is to get your seat at the table, get your voice heard, be part of that community. And there's so many just great opportunities out there. There's never been a better time to be in tech.
I will build off of Jane. My response was going to be raise your hand and open your mouth, because you have a lot to say and it's really important. And I would say raise your hand for things that take you on your career path. And purposely don't raise your hand for things that take you off the path you want to be on, because you will get distracted and never get back on your path. And so I think that's a really important piece. And then my second piece of advice, I know you asked for one, but my second piece of advice is to find a sponsor. Mentors are really important, but women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. So find yourself a sponsor. Find somebody who's going to sit in a meeting and put your name forward to take on the next project or be the voice at the table on a specific topic.
These are amazing answers. I'm going to try to build on them, but they're very comprehensive. My biggest piece of advice, I think, for women entering, especially the healthcare technology field, go where you're curious, right? Go where you're curious, because you're going to bring your passion and your desire to that solution set. Whatever you're curious about, lean in and dive into it. I love the notion of networking strategically. How do I make sure I have the right network? I'm informed. I have different perspectives, and getting a sponsor, I think that's wonderful. And I also think there's just be a lifelong learner. Never feel like, yeah, if I had stayed the path, I would have been a chief marketing officer at a technology company. And I took that experience to lean and go broader. And now I'm the CEO of a company. And so I think there's just so many opportunities if you follow your passion and curiosity.
Wow, this is all such wonderful advice. Thank you so much. And Karina, Jane, Rebecca, thank you for your time today and for joining us on the Mint's Women Leaders in Healthcare series. This discussion on the emerging role of AI in healthcare has really been so interesting, and it's led us down so many different paths that I wasn't even anticipating when we were preparing for this. So thank you so much. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you have any questions for our guests or comments, please feel free to reach out to any of us directly or email at healthlawdiagnosed@mids.com. I'm Bridget Keller, and this was Health Law Diagnosed.